This has been today's Concert Billboard. Tune in each day to hear when your favorite performers are appearing at venues in the WUSB broadcast area. Or maybe you'd like to try out one that you haven't heard before. The online version of Concert Billboard is at WUSB.FM and has an upcoming schedule months ahead, so you know what to look forward to. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook, 6:02, time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening. Oh, crap. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Actually, I'm going to appeal to our listeners for a little bit of help here. And so I know this might be a bit uncomfortable for those of you who just want to tune into the radio and lay back and maybe sip some drink or something. But I'm going to ask you to also serve as witness in a possible legal case, which probably won't happen, but if it does, I would just like for you to be compelled to come forward. And it has to do with it's extraordinary heat. You want to hear it? Can we turn on the theme for this for a second? Okay, listen to this. Listen to this. That is the sound. That is the sound of state bureaucracy not caring. Yeah, and deciding that, and someone did decide. Somebody did decide to not have air conditioning in this building when the temperature is up to 90 degrees. It's going to be 97 tomorrow, and no air conditioning for us in the radio station. That's, you know what? That's okay. I'm used to being abused. It's not a big deal. Some of us even like being abused. But, you know what doesn't like being abused is equipment. And I just had to deal with failing equipment, and it's failing because it's overheating. Yeah, we have a CD recorder here, and it's been working fine, but here it is. Temperatures approaching triple digits inside the studio, and guess what? It's starting to fail, and it's not fair. It's not fair to have to deal with wretched equipment that we have to keep replacing and fixing because we have overheated places. I mean, you know, humans are one thing. We can figure out ways to get around these uncomfortable situations, but machines are stupid. They can't figure that out. You can't dunk them in a cold bath or something like that. It causes more problems, believe me, than it solves. So if, in fact, it turns out this machine is damaged because of the heat, I'd like for you to join me. Is it a class action suit or some kind of, I don't know, something? But just, you know, I'm just saying right now, this is where it begins. This is where it has started. Everything was fine. Everything was peachy up until now. But we've got these loud fans going to try and keep us cool, but it's not keeping the machines cool, and they're starting to break down, and that's where radio stations start to fall apart. And it's not our fault. It's not your fault. We're doing everything we can. It's bureaucracy. It's incompetence. And I just wish there was a way that we could let people know about it. And then I realized, you know what, there is a way. We have a microphone. We have speakers, you have speakers that you're listening to us in, or headphones, or whatever. And maybe a few phone calls can be made so that we enter the 20th century here and start treating equipment with respect. We treat equipment with the utmost respect. We are who's a famous surgeon? Was it Christian Barnard, the guy who did the first open heart transplant or whatever? Yeah, well, we're that in the world of equipment, making things work. There's equipment here that's older than most of the people on the air, yet we make it work. That's how dedicated we are. But, you know, you have people lobbing hand grenades at you while you're trying to do this. It's a little bit frustrating. They haven't lobbed the hand grenades yet, but we understand that's in the budget. And all right, you know, I hate complaining. I hate bitching about things, but it had to be said. It had to be said. It really did. People are going to tell me, you know what, you didn't have to say that. But no, I think it had to be said. Because when the day comes when all of a sudden you can't hear something, or there's static everywhere, or all kinds of malfunctions are happening, I don't want it to fall on us as people who can't handle equipment and don't know what we're doing, because we do. It's just incredible scenarios that we have to deal with. But it makes it all fun, doesn't it? This actually is my last live program until July, because I'm going to be heading west. It's really, the definition of heat has been redefined. Actually, it's an interesting situation that I've got myself into here. It turns out a friend of mine moved to Arizona and forgot his car, or something like that. I'm not exactly sure how this happened. Also, by the way, I should point out, if that machine fails again, I'm going to have to run off microphone. That's another thing I have to point out. And so there'll be what sounds like either music fill or a period of silence while I'm trying to fix it, if it fails again. I'm keeping an eagle eye on it, though. Hopefully it won't. I have to help my friend get his car from New York out to Arizona. And, the easiest way to do that is to drive it, and that's what I'll be doing for the next couple of weeks. So next week, what you'll be hearing, this is going to be very interesting and a bit apropos, not right? Is that how you say it? Yeah, anti-apropos. Or it's just inappropriate. How about that? Inappropriate. Yeah, that's sort of the theme here. Because we'll be doing some broadcast that took place in the dead of winter. And not only in the dead of winter, in the dead of winter in northern Scandinavia. How about that? Yeah, where there was no sun. Yeah, you knew this was coming. If you were a regular listener to this radio program, you knew that at some point those radio shows were going to hit you broadside. When Kyle and I went to the Chaos Communication Congress last December, we stopped a couple of weeks earlier in the wonderful city of Tromsø, northern Norway, where the sun goes down in November, doesn't come back up till January, and experienced that for a little while, and then we took a train over to Stockholm in Sweden. So the next 3 weeks will be various highlights from there. I believe the first week takes place entirely in Norway. The second 2 weeks take place on the train from Norway to Sweden, and it's really something. And so many people listen to these programs and say, "Wow, you know, this makes me want to explore the world, makes me want to see other cultures," and hopefully that'll be the case. And you know, the fact that it's bitter cold outside and snowing when we recorded this might also make you want to go to different places as well as we swelter here in the heat. So, of course, I'll be sweltering in the heat, too, as I drive out to the desert. That's going to be something. And then after that, actually, this is history in the making. Yeah, if you remember last year, what we spent most of the year doing and got way too many people involved in was the whole countdown to the Starbucks I'm going to visit, the very first one ever, since I've never been to one in my life. We went through every single one of them and narrowed it down to one. And that one is in Newport Beach, California, and that's the one I'll be visiting. And I'll be doing that as part of this trip as well. I'm not sure how I'm going to get from Arizona to California. I understand the high-speed rail has not been finished. Right? As of now, I'm not sure about it in a couple of weeks, but I'll be making my way over to Newport Beach and then heading back by way of Seattle. And oh, by the way, speaking of Seattle, Club Mate Day, Club Mate Weekend taking place this weekend. If you're in the Seattle area, send email to info@clubmate.us. That's clubmate.us. And of course, Club Mate is this this hacker drink. Well, it became a hacker drink over in Germany. Every conference, they consume tens of thousands of these bottles, and we're the fools who have somehow managed to bring it into this country. And so, occasionally, what we do is we have these celebrations where we basically try and distribute it as much as possible for the lowest possible cost. And it really does get pretty expensive when you're shipping containers of bottles over an ocean and then over a country. So we're constantly looking for ways to bring that down. We're trying to figure out, actually, this is kind of interesting, we're trying to figure out how to ship large amounts of this by train, because everyone says trains are so much cheaper to ship things through than trucks. And, you know, I'd like to prove that. I'd like to prove that, but it seems you have to really have all kinds of things set up. Like, you have to almost have your own boxcar and your own rail siding to get anybody to even return your phone calls. And we're not quite there yet, but we're looking. We're always looking for ways to spread the joy. But anyway, in Seattle this weekend, it's going to be fun. And if you want to try out this this beverage, by all means, check it out. It's going to be very interesting as part of a whole hacker culture thing. And we'll be doing something like it in New York as well. We did that last year and the year before that, I believe. And it's always fun. You meet all kinds of people and share all kinds of stories and things like that. So that'll be happening in Seattle this weekend. And all kinds of other fun things will be happening in the next few weeks. I'm sure I'll be making some recordings and playing those at an inappropriate time sometime in the future. So that's where we stand. We're also going to try to take phone calls tonight because, as I said, this is the last live program till July. By all means, write down the phone number, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. So maybe we should get into some of the news that's been going on in the last week or so. I'm going through it right now, actually. It's kind of I had a hard time getting here. There's a problem with my printer. For some reason, it's jamming. I think it's, even though it's air conditioned where that particular thing is, it still is jamming more. I think it might be the heat. Who knows? So it took a long time to print out the stories I wanted to read tonight. I didn't have time to staple them together, so they're all in a big mess. And I had to run out of the house. I didn't have time to put on socks. And that's how crazy it got. Looks like the big story, though, is the Wiener scandal. And, you know, it's such a silly thing. It really is. I don't even want to talk about this, but everybody's talking about it. And the fact that it's even called the Wiener scandal itself is such a ridiculous thing. Okay, yeah, have you been following this story? Yeah, have you been trying not to follow this story? Basically, you have a congressman. I don't understand. I really, you know, to be honest, I think it's a silly thing. I think it's ridiculously minor and almost innocent, as innocent as a 46-year-old guy transmitting pictures of his crotch could possibly be. But it's our obsession with it. I think that's the real problem. I think that's where you have to look for possible screws loose. The thing is, when you are a congressman, and you're a congressman in a fundamentalist nation like ours, why put yourself in a situation where even in the remotest chance that something could go wrong, you're going to be, you know, caught with your clothes not where they're supposed to be or something? I'm talking about Elliot Spitzer. I'm talking about John Edwards. Newt Gingrich, the list goes on and on and on. Almost everybody, Bill Clinton, of course, everybody that seems to be in politics somehow seems to have some kind of sex scandal going on or just inappropriate behavior that they know they're going to get hung out to dry if it ever gets out. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's the thrill of not getting caught or the thrill of getting caught that drives people to do these things. But you just have to figure, you know, okay, here I am. I'm a politician. I'm moving step by step up the ladder. I'm getting more and more power, more and more riches. So, yeah, I'm going to send this picture of my crotch to some random woman in Seattle. Seattle seems to keep coming up. And of course, no one's ever going to find out about that. So I'm just going to do it anyway. And of course, someone does find out about it, and there you go. It's all downhill from here. Now, again, as I said, it's silly behavior, it's childish behavior, and, you know, it's in many countries it wouldn't be a big deal at all. This is not the same thing as even cheating on somebody. It's not the same thing as sending pornography. It's nothing like that, unless there's more to the story that we're not yet aware of. Here's what we got so far. Last week at this time, we talked about this on the other show, Wiener was saying that... Anthony Wiener, representative, U.S. Representative Anthony Wiener, a New York Democrat, and people are going to jump on that. They're going to say, why is a Democrat? Well, it's not only the Democrats, it's the Republicans, too. Remember certain airport bathrooms in Minnesota that have Republican senators in them? I can tell all kinds of stories. Every State of the Union, every party, every House of Congress has its share of stories, statewide, countywide, nationwide. So a week ago, the story was, according to him, that his account on Twitter had been hacked. And that's the excuse everybody always uses when something goes wrong. Oh, I got hacked. all this guilt being piled on me. Well, it wasn't me. I didn't send that letter. Somebody hacked my account and sent that letter in my name. Yeah, I didn't burn down that orphanage. Somebody hacked my credit card and made that purchase of kerosene on the way over there in my name. It wasn't me. Some hacker. Well, guess what? It wasn't a hacker. It was him. He did it. And the thing is, I could certainly overlook him doing this, him sending a picture via Twitter to somebody, because it's just silliness. And to me, using Twitter is more of an offense than the actual picture itself. And I use Twitter, too, but I'm just saying, come on, if you're going to take this seriously, and we're actually going to have to start talking about Twitter in the news as much as we are, you gotta take some guilt for that. I'm sorry. You do. There are real things going on in the world, and here we are talking about people tweeting pictures. And that's the front page story. Anyway, here's how it reads now. A week after claiming that a hacker had posted a lewd photo to his Twitter account, let me just stop you right there. It wasn't really lewd. It was just a picture of somebody's lap or someone wearing underwear. That's all, you know, you see the same thing in the New York Times Magazine every Sunday when they advertise for those stores that sell that kind of thing. So it really wasn't any different than that, unless there's a different picture going around that I didn't see. Not that I'm looking, I'm just saying that it didn't seem to be that big a deal. Maybe it was to the person who received the picture, maybe it was to his wife, I don't know, but the picture itself, not a big deal. Anyway, posted a quote-unquote lewd photo to his Twitter account. U.S. Representative Anthony Weiner yesterday apologized for lying about the incident and admitted carrying on inappropriate relationships with several women he'd met online. Now, again, we don't know what that means. These are people he's never even met. So what are we talking about? Conversations, pictures back and forth? Well, I don't really want to know the details. But what's inappropriate is our sticking our noses into all this. It's people's private lives. It really is. It's none of our business. Anyway, Weiner says he's not resigning his seat, and I wish him luck with that, because the jackals are out in both parties. We'll get to that in a second. He's not planning on separating from his wife, and more importantly, his wife is not planning on separating from him. He said he took full responsibility for his actions, both the relationships and for lying about sending the photo last month of his bulging underwear on his Twitter account. All right, again, the bulging wasn't really that significant, and again, the New York Times, I think, has it beat. The thing that gets me is the lying, the trying to pass the buck. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And picking on hackers, like everybody has to pick on hackers as the guilty party. You know, that to me points to weakness in character. And he really should deliver a message directed at people who call themselves hackers, saying, I'm sorry for maligning your race, or just your way of life, or whatever, however you want to define it. An apology directed at them would be nice, because they're really the only people that that took a hit from this, that were blamed for something they didn't do. Anyway, here's what he said. To be clear, the picture was of me, and I sent it. I'm deeply sorry for the pain this has caused my wife and our family, my constituents, my friends, my supporters, and my staff. How about for all the work that has not been done on your staff and so many others as a result of this? How about all the time wasted in offices talking about this? How about all the time on radio stations wasted? How about that, Anthony? Yeah, that's what really we should be sorry about. I lied because I was ashamed at what I had done. I didn't want to get caught. Yeah, I wonder what it was that finally led him to say, you know, I'm going to tell the truth about this. Because a lot of people just keep going and saying that my account was hacked, I didn't send this. He stopped short saying, well, is this a picture of you or not? That's where he knew that if he said it wasn't, somebody somewhere would find another picture of him in his underwear and compare it forensically and say, aha, this is you. And then there would be a much bigger scandal of even more ridiculous... it's just... I don't know if I want to read any more of this. I really don't know. Well, it's the reaction, really, from other people that I think we should focus on. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, she's in his own party, by the way. Democrats are in the minority. She announced she would call for an ethics committee investigation to determine whether any official resources were used or any other violation of House rules occurred. For what? To use a Twitter account? Official resources used to tweet something? Or is it the underwear? Is that official resources? What? Why can't we just call this what it is? Some guy transmitting a picture to somebody that he didn't want to get have become public. It's really as simple as it can possibly be. The seven-term congressman said during his press conference that he talked with Pelosi briefly that day, saying she was not happy, but also told me that she loved me and wanted us to pull through this. I just wonder what the rest of the world thinks of this. When they hear about the crises, people are dying of E. coli in Germany. All right, there's all kinds of insurrections and revolutions going on around the world. Our big story is a congressman tweeting a picture of himself in his underwear, or just a picture of his underwear. That's the story. Meanwhile, the Republican Party chairman, you see how he's being treated by the Democrats. Well, Republicans, you know they're going to be even harder on him. The Republican Party chairman said today that Representative Anthony Weiner should resign after admitting to sexually charged online relationships with several women and lying about his misdeeds. The New York congressman seemed increasingly isolated from even his fellow Democrats. As a House Democrat leader, Nancy Pelosi formally requested that House ethics probe, and the Senate's top Democrat declined to publicly defend him. Reince Priebus said in a statement that either Pelosi and Democrat Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz believe that members of Congress are held to a different standard, or they believe the congressman's actions demand his departure from the House. Senate Democrat leader Harry Reid delivered a rebuff to Weiner, a clear sign of the frustrations fellow Democrats have with a scandal they want to see over as soon as possible. "I know Congressman Weiner," Reid told reporters. "I wish there was some way I could defend him, but I can't." You know, people have said less to disagree with President Bush for starting a war that killed thousands of our own people and hundreds of thousands of others than they have in this particular case. You know, I'd like to poll some of these people in Weiner's own party to see how strongly they spoke out against real misdeeds that cost people lives, that cost billions of dollars, as opposed to something easy like this, where you can just point to somebody acting like a, I don't want to say like a child, because, well, children really shouldn't be doing that either, just acting immaturely. It's easy to point the finger at somebody. And maybe, you know, somebody would make a better congressman if their failings had been made public. If they're not held to this standard of, "I've never done anything wrong in my life. Never taken a puff of marijuana. Never engaged in any kind of relationship that was inappropriate. Never lied. Never stole. Never..." Let's leave it at the minimal level of offenses. And we can move our way up to much more heinous offenses later on, and we'll see how that works out. But the point is, people are imperfect. People need to be seen as imperfect. And when you have somebody or a position where people are expected to be 100% gods, someone who can never do any wrong, that person worries me, because you know there's something going on. You know there's something inside that is just waiting to be unleashed. And God help you if you get in the way when that happens. We hold people in religion up to these high standards, and we find that they commit all kinds of horrible crimes, possibly as a result of being so repressed and expected to live an inhuman existence. Same thing with politicians. So yeah, you know, this is what it is. Guy did something silly. The worst thing is he blamed hackers for it. That's how I feel. But we'll see where we are. Well, we can't see where we are next week. We won't be here. But by the time I get back, will there be a Weiner in Congress or not? I guess we'll have to find out. It's so sad that that's his name, too. It really does not make it something that you can talk about with a straight face. Not that you should be talking about it with a straight face. It's a silly thing. Extremely silly. All right. Can we get to some real news? This is good. This is something that happened in New York. From another Democrat, Governor Andrew Cuomo, said a week ago, on Wednesday, that he was suspending New York's participation in a federal immigration enforcement plan that has drawn fire from immigrant advocates, civil liberties lawyers, and elected officials in the state and around the country. A statement from Cuomo's office said there was mounting evidence that the program, called Secure Communities, had not only failed to meet its goal of deporting the most serious immigrant criminals, but was also undermining law enforcement and compromising public safety. "There are concerns about the implementation of the program," Cuomo said, "as well as its impact on families, immigrant communities, and law enforcement in New York." That makes New York the second state to announce its intention to withdraw from the program and set up a confrontation with the Obama administration, which has made secure communities a cornerstone of immigration enforcement strategy. Illinois was the first state to cancel participation in the program. Now, under this program, which actually was begun by Bush, the fingerprints of everyone booked into a local or county jail are sent to the Department of Homeland Security and compared with prints in its files. If officials find that a suspect is in the country illegally or is a non-citizen with a criminal record, they may seek to deport the person. By Wednesday, that fingerprint sharing had been introduced in about 41% of the nation's jurisdictions, including 27 of 62 counties in New York. Cuomo's move means that those counties' participation will end. The entire country is scheduled to join the program by 2013. Now, while Secure Communities has contributed to a sharp rise in deportations, it doesn't appear to have won President Obama many allies. It's angered immigrants who supported Democrats in recent elections. It's also failed to convince many of the president's Republican opponents that he is sufficiently committed to enforcement. Now, why are people opposed? Opponents of the program contend that even though it was mainly intended to ensnare convicted criminals and people deemed a security threat, it has instead caught too many immigrants charged with low-level crimes or guilty only of being in the country illegally. And this pattern has driven immigrants deeper into the shadows and deterred them from helping officials actually fight crime. In addition, critics have assailed the rollout of Secure Communities, which has been plagued by seemingly contradictory statements about how it works and whether local and state participation is voluntary. Until the numerous questions and controversies regarding the program can be resolved, we have determined that New York is best served by relying on existing tools to ensure the safety of its residents, especially given our overriding concern that the current mechanism is actually undermining law enforcement. Immigrant advocates praised Cuomo. It's clear the tide is turning against Secure Communities, said Pablo Alvarado, director of the National Day Laborer Organizing Network in Los Angeles. It's high time for the president to terminate the program before any further damage is done to our communities. Yeah, it's very easy to stand up and say immigrants are illegal immigrants are overriding our nation and basically destroying our way of life, when in actuality they're probably cutting your grass right now, helping to build that addition to your home. And if not, the companies that you work with are taking advantage of their cheap labor. But you're not speaking up about that so much, because you're the one who saves the money. You're the one who pays them and turns a blind eye to that. You just don't want them in your streets. You don't want to see them. You don't want them going to your schools. You don't want them possibly getting into our country legally one day and maybe speaking a little bit too much of that language that you don't like. That's what it's really all about. And yeah, I know there are people that aren't like that, that are opposed to more immigrants coming in. But there are so many who really are relying on blind hatred and fear of the unknown, fear of something different. And when you look back a century or even a few decades ago, at your own ancestors, how they got into this country. You compare it to what people are doing today. Were those people invited? Did they have permission before they got on that boat and went to Ellis Island? No, they came here looking for a better life. And the thing you have to ask is, when people come to this country in search of a better life, are they also making better lives for other people who are already here and for the people who come with them? Now, if the answer is overwhelmingly no, they're destroying everything, oh, okay then, you look at that. But if the answer is, yeah, they're making things better, but they didn't follow procedure, I think you're being a jerk. I think you're being a bureaucratic jerk, the same kind who doesn't let air conditioning come into our building, because that's not the way things have worked in the past. And the only reason that we're so upset about it now is because the culture is a little bit different, the skin color is a little bit different. And you can say, well, I'm not a racist, I'm not a nationalist, but look at the people around you who are agreeing with you and see how many of those can say that. Go to some websites. Read some of the feedback on CNN, on any of those other news sites that feel that everybody has an equal say and every opinion is equally valid, and see just how many of them are filled with hate. People like that are all around. And I'm going to get to see a bunch of them, too, aren't I? I'm going out to Arizona, which is the capital of all this. Oh, I know there's plenty of good people in Arizona, and I'm going to try and find out what's really going on out there. Maybe settle this. Try to avoid that idiot of a sheriff. Yeah, he's an idiot. I called him that on the radio. Yeah. All right. Let's see. Why don't we read some mail? Oh, good news. I know I'm a bit crazy for following the story, but the Winnipeg team in the NHL, the team that's just moved from Atlanta, they sold out their season tickets in 5 minutes. They opened it up to the general public on Saturday, and inside of 5 minutes, you could not get tickets. I think they sold 13,000. They're leaving 2,000 per game for non-season ticket holders. But inside of 5 minutes, and this is for the smallest arena in the NHL. This is one of the reasons why I like it, because of the sincerity of this place up in northern Canada that really wanted an NHL team more than anybody, and Atlanta clearly didn't. There were fans there, but not enough. And everything was against them. They were in a different country, and the NHL has been pushing to move things away from Canada for quite some time. They had a small city, they had a small arena, but boy, did they love their team. They wanted that team back, and they got it. They didn't get the same team. That team is in Phoenix, of all places. Everything seems to wind up in Arizona. But this team came from Atlanta and has moved up there. They still don't have a name, though. The company that bought them, True North, they're waiting this one out, they say, maybe hoping that the push to bring back the Jets dies down a little. The old team was called the Winnipeg Jets. And rumor has it they don't want to name the new team the Jets. I think it's silly, because they already have all of the jerseys. Everybody wears them in that city. People are always talking about bringing back the Jets. Seems like an easy way to make a mint and get a lot of people on your side. So people are shouting all the louder. There's a petition online, gopetition.com/petition/39649.html. Why does gopetition.com need a directory called petition? What else are we going to have on that site? 39649 is the number for the petition there. They got more than 12,000 signatures already. I guess soon we'll find out. True North Chairman Mark Chipman said, his name was Mark Chapman, that would be bad. Mark Chipman said last week at the press conference that the name would be picked in the near future, with rumblings following that 10 days would be a likely timeline. So maybe sometime this week. One wonders what the holdup is, according to this article in the Toronto Globe and Mail. Jets is currently trending in public opinion polls at between 50-75%. As the fan base's name of choice, the league has said it will make the trademarks available. Jerseys and merchandise are already widely available, and they could presumably hit the ground running. There's rumors they want to keep the Manitoba Moose name of the minor league team that was in Winnipeg ever since the Jets left. And of course, that also brings in the entire province, not just the city of Winnipeg. How about the Manitoba Jets? All right, compromise? Or the Manitoba Moose Jets? Or something like that. I don't know. I just hope that they do the right thing here, and that there's pride there, because it's a fun thing to see. The thing that doesn't get me, though, they're going to be playing in the the Southeast Division next year. There's not enough time, according to the NHL. There's not enough time to redraw the schedule out so that the team in Winnipeg can play in a Northern Division and play teams there more often than they play teams in the Southeast. So if you're going to look at the standings, you're going to see teams from, Florida? And where else do they have teams? Southeast. I don't know. Crazy places. Memphis and Winnipeg is going to be stuck in there. And apart from the horrible lesson of geography that sends to our kids, think of the airfare. Think of the fuel that's going to be wasted, because they're going to be playing these local division games with teams that are nowhere near them, and they're going to have to keep going back and forth. It's insane. I remember as a kid, too, both in baseball and football, the Atlanta team was in the Western Division. And I was asking everybody, why? Why is this? For years, this was the case. The Atlanta Braves, the Atlanta Falcons, both in the Western Division. And that's when I learned that people don't like it when you ask a lot of questions that there's no good answer for. If you're going to call something by a geographical location, try to get the geography right. You know, it's not so much. And I do think there's enough time. The season begins in October. It's currently June. You just have to, you can have a computer recalculate who plays whom. And as far as reserving space in various venues, well, I think there are people whose full-time job it is to do just that. And 4 months is plenty of time to get that done. All right, that's our sports report for today. How about some letters? And we'll take some phone calls. You know what? I'm going to go into delay, and then we'll get some phone calls coming in, hopefully, because I've been talking up a storm tonight. And I'd like to hear what people have to say. 631-632-WUSB is our phone number. It's 631-632-9872. And let's go to delay.
Hi, this is Yakov Smirnov, the Russian comedian, and I'm glad to be listening to WUSB instead of the KGB.
Here we are in delay. It seems to be getting smoother and smoother with every week. Well, okay, now that we're here, though, it's always a little bit tricky, though, getting the levels just right, because I come out a little bit louder in delay, or somewhat distorted, but all right, I think we're all right. Dear Emmanuel, love the show, but you complain way too much. Did I read this? It sounds like something I've already read. This was somebody. Yeah, I'm sorry, I read this one. This is about the Google thing. Yeah, okay. I was complaining about Google. I will continue to complain about Google. Too many letters. Hang on. This is the problem when I have to run out without even putting on socks, because no, that's not right either. Because my printer is jamming. Yeah, you know what? Why don't we take phone calls? We'll do that first, and then I'll try to find the letters. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, it's Rose. I called you last week. I was going to Kansas for the rally for Bradley Manning.
Oh, yes. Did you go?
Yes, I went.
And how was it?
It was good. You know, it was a long ride. It was 25 hours driving straight. We had four of us driving.
Oh, wow.
That was tough, but, you know, other than that...
You didn't stop for a break or anything?
I'm sorry?
You didn't stop to sleep or anything like that?
No, well, we slept in the car.
Okay.
You know, we just kind of wanted to get there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we were going to stay in a hotel a night.
Right, right.
So we got there, went to sleep, went to the rally on Saturday morning, and the rally was good. You know, there was a lot of people there. There were people from Code Pink. There were the Veterans Against the War, Veterans of Peace, the gay community was there, you know, a lot of people in support.
Mm-hmm.
And we marched over to the base, you know, at Fort Leavenworth. And I'm telling you, you know, I told you I went in March to Quantico in Virginia.
Right.
Yeah, it's a maximum security, and there were cops and horses and dogs and mace and, you know, big guns. Well, here... I mean, I could count the cops. There was a very, very small, you know, presence of police. It was very calm. You know, there were a few people, like, on the other side of the street with signs that Bradley Manning is a traitor. And
uh-huh.
You know, we tried to go over and talk to them. But, you know, the usual, you know, rally-type stuff.
Right, right.
But
Were there many local people who showed up in support of Bradley Manning?
There were local people, yes. And there were people from, you know, Oregon. There were people from Arizona. You know, I think we were from New York. I think we came probably one of the furthest. There were people from Missouri, from Minnesota. You know, it was like a wide range.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was a demonstration in New York, I believe, that day also. And but this was interesting because there were so many different people. You know.
Right. Right.
And I don't know.
That's great. I mean, that means a lot. I'm sure he's heard of it, and it means the world to him as well.
I hope so. I mean, I hope you got the vibes, you know.
Uh-huh.
From us out there.
Oh, that's incredible commitment to do that, to drive 25 hours just to show your support for somebody that you can't even talk to.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I got to walk with his dad. His dad was there.
Really?
Yeah, and I think his name is Brian. You know, I called him Mr. Manning, and I heard him on that PBS special I was telling you last week, and I've heard him on, I believe it was Democracy Now, and he just sounded so, I didn't care for him, what I heard of him. You know, he's like, you know, military guy, and
mm-hmm.
sounded kind of embarrassed of what his son, you know, not only was he gay, but he was, you know, what he could have done. And but when I was walking with him and talking to him, you know, although he was guarded, he, you know, I asked him, how's he doing? And he said, he's holding up, you know. And he said when he was, he made it known that, he goes, when he was in Quantico, I went there and I stayed there a month and I saw him as much as I could, you know. He said, but right now I haven't seen him since he moved to Kansas, since they moved him. I'm not on the visitors list yet or something. I don't know what that's all about. But
the thing is, he obviously comes from a different school of thought, but he is showing up. He's going out there. He's supporting his son. He's standing by him in a very difficult time. It'd be very easy to just walk away from all this, and to his credit, he's not doing this.
Yeah, yeah. He was very different than I heard him on the news. You know, he was, it's heartbreaking, you know, to see this man. He looked very sad. He's walking with all of us. It was like 100 degrees. I mean, you're talking about it's hot in the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So friggin' hot, and there's no breeze. And but glad I went, and we'll see. You know, if he goes to Washington when he's arraigned, that'll be a piece of cake. You know, that'll be an easy drive.
Oh, yeah, of course. There'll be a lot of people there, I'm sure. But it means so much just to keep track of the case and not to let him be forgotten.
No, he's, and the people, they even, they've been collecting money, donations for a billboard in Washington, and they got the money, which I forget how much, $10,000, you know, it's ridiculous how much it costs to put a billboard up, and they're going to put one up, you know, stating that, you know, whistleblowers are not criminals, you know, free Bradley Manning, something like that. They're going to put up, I think, right around the time where, you know, when he has to go to court and is charged.
Okay, well, there's more information on BradleyManning.org.
Yes.
People can find out all kinds of things, petitions, how to take action, upcoming demonstrations, things like that. But I just want to thank you on behalf of everybody for going out there and representing New York.
Oh, okay. You're welcome.
All right.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
And that's inspiring when people do things like that. I've gone to many rallies, but usually they're the ones with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in D.C. or New York, the easy ones. This is a hard one. This is one that you have to physically sacrifice a lot, and the payoff might not seem like a whole lot when you get there, but it really is. These are the ones that matter. These are the ones that last. So, again, many thanks to that listener for doing that and for everybody else who showed up. And, again, BradleyManning.org for more information. And regardless of how you feel about Bradley or about the case, or about leaks in general, at least listen. At least open your mind to possibilities. And I say that for people on both sides of the issue. It's important to talk to those that you don't agree with as well as those you do agree with. That's the way bridges are built. Okay. Here's a letter that we got. Yeah, I found the letters. this is from our friend Jeff. Just listened off the wall from last week. We were talking about your religious views, or lack of. I think there may be a label for you. At last. Possibilian... I can say this word. I've never said this word in my life. Possibilianism. Possibilianism? Possibilianism. Okay. It's subtly different than atheist. An atheist says there isn't any evidence for any of the gods so far, so we have no reason in believing they exist. A possibilian says, I'm open to ideas that we don't have any way of testing right now. All right, Jeff, I went to the Wikipedia page on this, and there is one for possibilianism, not to be confused with possibilism. I love Wikipedia. Of course, if you go to possibilism, there's not really much about that. There's simply possible links to possibilism. For instance, there's geography, possibilism, a theory of cultural geography, or there's possibilism in politics, an 1880s faction of the Federation of the Socialist Workers of France, or possibilism and possibilist, a somewhat derogatory term for reformist socialism and social democracy. Yeah, I'm sure you could confuse possibilianism with those, but maybe just in pronunciation. But anyway, I'll say it right. Possibilianism. I was saying it better before. Possibilianism. Damn it. It figures this is what I'm going to be labeled as. Something I can't pronounce. Possibilianism is a philosophy which rejects both the idiosyncratic claims of traditional theism and the positions of certainty and atheism in favor of a middle exploratory ground. The term was first defined by neuroscientist David Eagleman in relation to his book of fiction called Some. Asked whether he was an atheist or a religious person on a National Public Radio interview in February 2009 is when this came. I could have said this years ago. I could have made up this term because I believed this for a long time. And he, oh, wow. Boy, I blew it, didn't I? Anyway, February 2009, he said, I call myself a possibilian. 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 He can probably pronounce it better, so okay, you get the word. I'm open to ideas that we don't have any way of testing right now. In a subsequent interview with the New York Times, Eagleman expanded on the definition. Our ignorance of the cosmos is too vast to commit to atheism, and yet we know too much to commit to a particular religion. A third position, agnosticism, is often an uninteresting stance in which a person simply questions whether his traditional religion's story, say, a man with a beard on a cloud, is true or not true. But with possibilianism, I'm hoping to define a new position, one that emphasizes the exploration of a new, unconsidered possibilities. Possibilianism is comfortable holding multiple ideas in mind. It is not interested in committing to any particular story. I like it. I think that's, if I'm going to be labeled as anything, a possibilianist is what I'm comfortable with, where anything is possible. As of April 2011, close to 1,000 Facebook members had switched their religious affiliation to possibilianism. I was a foundationist before, but maybe I'll switch now as well. Okay, we have time for one or two more phone calls if anybody's out there. So the phone was ringing while I was defining who I was. Please give a call, 631-632-9872. We'd like to hear from people. Here's a letter from Ricardo out of Brisbane, Australia. Listening to May 24th Off the Wall and your tribulations with your car key. I really do complain a lot, don't I? Well, you know, the car key. Oh, boy. You know, I've been leaning against the car key. This is the car key in question. If I lean against this car key too much and the battery dies and the programming gets lost, I have a useless hunk of junk that I can't drive unless I get up to Canada somehow to resync the key. I think that's something worth complaining about. I found it strange the car can receive the signal and flash its indicators, yet not disable its immobilizer. Is your key sending out some blank code which will flash the lights on any smart car similar to yours? You can have some real fun with other smart car owners if it does. Well, yeah, but I have to go to Canada to do that anyway. I'll try it, though, if I go back up there. If not, then it could be that the pairing code with your car is stored in flash ROM in the key, but to avoid replay attacks, the key keeps a sequence number and its battery backed up RAM. With the counter reset, the car may well be ignoring the key as it's sending codes with a sequence ID that is out of range of what the CPU in the car expects from that key. It's pretty much, I think, what it is. And that's Ricardo in Brisbane. Thank you so much for that that email there. We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
It is Jay.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. I looked up the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
And did you see all the work I did on that last week?
I didn't know what it was.
Uh-huh.
I thought you were just speaking off the cuff. That really is funny. That guy has some real valid points.
There are some very valid points there. Very valid points. And this Flying Spaghetti Monster, I think, is more popular than possibilianism at the moment.
I did the Flying Spaghetti Monster, man. That's some good stuff.
All right. Well, I'm glad you looked it up.
All right.
Anything else? No? Okay. Take care. I think that's going to do it for us tonight. And that's going to do it for me until July, when I'll be back live. Again, next week we'll be in Norway. Actually, we'll be playing a show from December in northern Norway, which is a ton of fun. You'll hear Kyle and myself speaking from a mountain, a mountain high above the city of Tromsø. Followed the week after by part one of a two-part episode taking place on a Scandinavian train. traveling in the dead of night. Not really the dead of night, but the sun goes down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so and rises at, I think, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So there's a lot of night up there. So pretty much the odds are you're going to be talking at night if you're talking at any time. So that's a two-part show that will take you through the rest of June. Really worth listening to, a lot of fun. I just heard them a couple of days ago. And then we're back in July with all kinds of recounting fun adventures. I guess I'm not sure if there'll be a contingent of people in Newport Beach, California. I'm not sure when I'll be doing the Starbucks entry, the first one ever. But it's going to happen. We knew this was going to happen, and we worked up for it for a whole year, Newport Beach, California. I guess, I'm loathe to say this, I guess the best way to keep track of where I am and what I'm doing with my schedule is to follow my Twitter account. And that's E-Man Goldstein. I can't spell Emmanuel Goldstein because it's three characters too much. So it's E-M-M-A-N-G-O-L-D-S-T-E-I-N. That's just the way it is. And of course, you want to follow the 2600 Twitter account. This 2600 is that one, and you'll find all kinds of magazine and hacker-related things on that. But whatever. We'll update you as things progress. See you in a bit.
I be your mirror, reflect what you are, in case you don't know. I be the wind, the rain and the sunset, the light on your door, to show that you're home. When you think the night has in your mind, that inside you're twisted and unkind, let me stand to show that you are blind. Put down your hand, 'cause I see you. I find it hard to believe you don't know the beauty you are. But if you don't, to your darkness, so you won't be afraid. When you think the night has in your mind, that inside you're twisted and unkind, let me stand to show that you are blind. Please put down your hand, 'cause I see you.